Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Franz on. Keith, how you doing, brother? Glad to have you on again.
Doing great. How you doing?
I had my daughter's daddy-daughter dance tonight, so I missed the game. Just got back from that. She's 13, so only got probably one good year left before she completely starts ignoring me. But it was a great evening for that, and it sounds like I didn't miss much with the beloved in a game against the Wizards. Let's hear your review.
It was a fairly dull game. Almost everybody scored in double digits that played, though. So that's one thing. Lowry did get more than 7 shots tonight. He hit 19, but he only made 5. And he was 1-for-8 from three-point land.
Oh,
so kind of a disappointing night for Lowry.
Valentine, I know, had a double-double, it sounds like. I heard on the radio driving back. And so did Markkanen. You know, Markkanen occasionally has games like this. Big picture here, we have to hope they lose as many games as possible. And, you know, I looked it up, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, the core of Markkanen, Dunn, and Levine have played a total of 3 games together. They won 2, they lost 1 to the Golden State Warriors, and they beat the Heat and Pistons. You know, so this year, I do hope they have a few games back. But I think if that core is together, I think they're going to win some games. So the goal should be going forward is to minimize those 3 guys as much as possible. Do get them a little bit of time together so they get used to playing with each other, because that's the future of our team, those 3 and whoever we add, in this upcoming draft. What do you think of that plan? You know, let's try to come up with various reasons why all these guys can miss games. I do like the fact they just sat Levine in the second game of a back-to-back.
They can do something similar to like what the Hawks do, where every player besides maybe Levine, since we're focusing his rehab, maybe only have Zach play 30 minutes and everybody else average around 20 minutes a game. Keep the rotations deep, keep it about 12 deep, play everybody, keep Zach playing 30 minutes a game. Obviously, him getting his rhythm back and getting the feel for the game is a big goal for the remaining 28, 29 games, whatever it is that we have left here. I think you keep him at around 30 minutes to focus his rehab and kind of just keep everybody else around 20 on, most games. That should be a strategy that works well enough to lose us games. Now, the Magic Monday, that probably won't work. We probably have to try a little bit harder, but I don't think Dunn's going to be back for that game, so we don't have to worry about all 3 of them.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, let's talk a little bit about the Timberwolves game, because that was an enjoyable game to watch. And that was the first time all year that I said, wow. You know, when I was watching Zach LaVine, where I was like really blown away about how athletic he looked, how fast he was. It was really good to see that he was clearly, probably the best athlete on the floor along with Jimmy. And just taking it in the fourth quarter right at him, aggressively attacking the rim. That's what I wanted to see from LaVine. I still had some moments where I was a little bit upset where, even though the shot went in, he dribbled into, let's say, a double team once, and he rose up and knocked down a jumper while Markkanen was wide open at the three-point line. I still foresee some issues there with his shot selection. I think it's clear in the games he's played that that's going to be an issue, and that's something the coaching staff is going to need to work with him on. But how can you not be excited after watching that athletic performance in yesterday's game?
Oh, no, there's nothing but excitement around him. The tunnel vision is a little bit concerning, but at the end of the day, he's still getting his legs back. He's still getting his rhythm back. Him being overly aggressive this season isn't a horrible thing. He's trying to establish himself as the alpha, and it worked out last night. There was, pretty much every other possession could have gone either way. Down the stretch, we would like to see him be a little more controlled, make the basketball play, and not be Jimmy Butler. But he was staring Jimmy Butler in the face, and that battle had a lot of pride on the line, and as we talked previously, I actually wanted to win that game. So to see them take it as seriously as, some fans may have, was great. And I wish we could have got more footage of Thibs on the way out.
Yeah. What else are the other comments about that game? First of all, I mean, it was great to see Taj and Jimmy come back and get that kind of reception. They absolutely deserve that. When you think that Taj Gibson was a number 26 first-round pick, Butler was number 30, and what they did for this team over the years, I mean, it's really amazing to consider. I would argue those are two. There's not a GM who's currently active that has two better picks on his resume that late in the first round.
Not that comes to mind. Obviously, the Lakers hit really well with Kuzma this year. His career's obviously fairly young here, so we won't know what he's going to amount to. But I think the tribute was definitely warranted. Jimmy and Taj both kind of epitomized what Chicago is, at least the blue-collar class of Chicago, that is just hardworking, and brings it every game. So I thought that was very fitting. But I was very glad that we sent them home with a loss.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the situation right now with no trades being made at the deadline. Of course, there's people that are angry that the Bulls didn't make any further trades. When you look at it, I think there are only two number one picks traded. Cleveland sent theirs in that Lakers deal, and then the Bulls were able to acquire the Pelicans' number one pick, which is, you know, almost a lottery pick right there on the edge of that. And I just don't understand the general, everyone's looking for issues, right? There's always a problem. I don't believe you should have traded any of their players, with the exception of possibly Holiday, just for a second-round pick. I think second-round picks are more often than not worthless. What do you think of the criticism that they did not make an additional move after the Nico move?
I don't have a problem with it because, as you pointed out, the only one you missed would have been the Blake Griffin trade, and obviously we don't have a Blake Griffin to trade.
Oh, right.
And the pick that they got in the Blake Griffin trade is currently 13th. By the end of the year, Detroit can end up in the playoffs, and New Orleans could end up out of the playoffs, and we will have gotten a better pick for Nico than they got for Blake Griffin, which will just be insane. But that aside, I can't be overly critical. Obviously, I would have liked to seen Holiday and Rolo both moved for a first, get an extra first in there. But I didn't want to see them given away, so I was not upset. And there wasn't any deals done for cap space. Kenneth Faried was trying to get dumped. I know the Pacers were interested in taking a cap dump for a first-round pick, but I don't think that that was what was being offered to take Faried on. Because the Pacers didn't end up doing it. The Bulls didn't end up doing it. So I really, there's nothing to be upset about because we didn't miss out. Teams were just being very stingy and holding on to their picks very tightly. I think some of that has to do with the buyouts they knew were coming, like the Tony Allen situation.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I really can't see how you can be upset. Because it would have came down to giving them away. And the presence that Rolo has to this team, even through next year, is worth way more than a second-round pick.
That's my big issue, is the Bulls. Lou Williams signed for $8 million a year. When that contract was signed, people needed to realize that Lou Williams is one of the better players in the NBA this season. He's 31 years old, and he signed for a contract for $8 million a year for basically 2 years with a team option in year three. These contracts that were signed in 2016 are dead. And you're going to see bargain after bargain signed over the next 2 years. And I'd rather have the Bulls take advantage of a buyer's market for the next 2 years than bring on some albatross of a contract for a second-round pick, which is so incredibly dumb. Second-round picks are worthless for the most part, especially if you're going to bring in someone else's albatross to load on your roster. Would I have taken a bad contract for a first? Yeah, I guess I would have, depending on where it was at, but it seems like those weren't available. And also I will say that, you know, everybody's like talking like, well, we brought on a bad contract. No, we also gave away Nico's $12 million. It was pretty much a straight, even trade. You know, that's another thing I don't understand, is everybody saying, well, we tied up our cap situation. Nico basically had a team option in year two. We weren't going to let him just walk away. We would have had to sign him again for $12 million a year. So Omer, we basically traded Omer for Nico and their number one pick. I do that all day because you're not really making your cap situation any worse.
Well, no. Actually, we made our cap situation better by about $2 million next year. And if you throw the fact that we have to pay Omer $3 million to get out of the second year past this on his deal, pretty much comes to even with Nico between this year and next year. And that's all you can really hope to do when you're trading for anybody. You have to match the salaries. It's very rare that a team has an expiring that they can send back. In this case, obviously taking on next year of Omer, which really doesn't affect us much. It was more than worth it, and I don't understand how anybody can be frustrated with that situation. We were taking at least $10 million worth of money back. If we had to take it in between two players, that's an extra roster spot that you give up, and roster spots are worth more than $5 million in cap space to most teams. So there's a lot that goes into it that a lot of people are complaining about, don't fully understand, and most people still just have a vendetta against the front office. So regardless of what they do, there will always be some kind of issue of how they did it.
Yes. Agreed. That's all you're going to do, is you're just always going to find a reason that something they could have done better, even if you don't have any proof of it. Like, to me, the biggest thing is now I'm reading this, you know, with the trade of Wade. Oh, the Bulls contract that they signed with Wade was so awful. It was the worst move. It was just horrible. Did you pay any attention to the agreement signed in 2016? On the list of bad agreements in 2016, Dwayne Wade's contract, probably about 50, I don't know, 60. There were nothing but bad agreements signed in 2016. A general rule of life for anyone, never get upset over a 1 or 2 year contract. It's something that it's basically not your cat. It's not something that's going to hurt you in the long run. 4 year deals for guys like Mahimi and Noah and Dang that were just awful signings, those are the kind of deals that are going to screw you up for years to come.
I think the Wade contract comes into people feel that the Bulls messed up the only shot at giving Jimmy Butler a legitimate, you know, window of opportunity. What I feel that people are forgetting is Jimmy Butler was our source of bringing in the free agents. Who were we left with? We were left with Jimmy's friend, Dwayne Wade, who Jimmy got along with. Who Jimmy actually got along with too well to the detriment of our team because D-Wade boosted his ego. And it was D-Wade and Jimmy's team and everybody else was just along for the ride. So I think people forget that factor, and I've brought it up on here before. Yes, Dwayne Wade was going to opt in. Nobody would turn down $25 million opposed to the five or less that you're staring down elsewhere. So you can't blame Dwayne Wade from that regard, but the way that he opted in was very strategic and very sneaky. Him and Butler were on vacation in Europe together, and he opted in a week before he had to and several days before the draft instead of waiting till after the draft. Big reason we were trading Jimmy was because Dwayne Wade's impending signing. They thought the only way out of it, maybe, would be to trade Butler. Maybe then Wade looks at other options. Wade kind of took away some of our leverage when he opted in prematurely.
Well, I'd also like to counter, who in that 2016 did you want to sign? Like, you can't just say, we shouldn't have never signed Wade. Well, who did you want to sign? You're exactly right. Jimmy Butler wanted Dwayne Wade. And if his name wasn't Dwayne Wade and you just looked at his stats in that year, he had a fine year. 30 minutes, 18 points per game. If it wasn't Dwayne, everyone would have been ecstatic. If it was Kirk Heinrich, they would have been putting statues up for him. But it was Dwayne Wade, and it was, you know, near his career lows. And so, and he was making a ton of money, so people just had this, you know, just, and again, it was the front office with the younger and more athletic comment, and then they decided to go in that direction. I do understand why they did it, and I thought it almost worked. I mean, we were up 2-0 on the Celtics until Rondo got hurt, so.
Well, no, that's the other thing that I was pointing out to somebody the other day. Oh, the Bulls messed up so bad. Jimmy Butler's such a great player. We should have built around him. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, you do realize the player that you wanted to build around had a 2-0 lead coming home with his best friend, Dwayne Wade, and they choked without Rondo. The biggest non-factor that people, proclaimed going into the season that Rondo was completely washed up and he was going to be more of a problem than he was going to be a help. And he was the only reason we were in that game, that series, rather. He went down and everything went out the window. I mean, Jerry and Grant obviously didn't help. But,
he's terrible. Yeah.
So it was a failed project. They definitely should have went a different route. But it's not like they, had some hot young prospect that was going to come and duo with Jimmy. And then, we're going to get into people bringing up, oh, well, we could have got Kyrie. No, we didn't have anything to trade for Kyrie.
Yeah. No. I mean, the whole situation is people are upset and they're frustrated because Derrick Rose, his ability, he's almost out of the NBA and he's 29 years old. He went from an MVP to a guy who's almost out of the league over the course of 6 years, and his decline was massive and quick. And we had signed him to a 5-year deal. And so everything, all the ramifications around that signing are the reasons why the team didn't, people are angry when you really get down to it. And so, they're just looking for a place to blame it on. Let's get a little bit into these picks that they have now with this lottery, now potential lottery pick from the Pelicans. Kind of in that 10 to 16 range. And I know we had talked about adding this on the previous show, but we didn't get a chance to do it. So I'd like to do that now. A couple of the names I've seen on there, I'd like to start one, Knox from Kentucky. Could you give your 411 on him as a player? And do you think he would be a good fit with the Beloved?
Oh, I think Knox is a great fit for this team. He should still be 18 on draft night. Great length. I believe he is the tallest small forward prospect out of the ones that we'd probably be in the running for. He's 6'9", has a 7'1 wingspan, averaging about 15 points. Could improve his three-point shot. That was the concern coming out of high school. But I believe he's shooting around 35%, so that's not bad for somebody that came in with concerns around something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he fits our plan, our timeline, great.
Do you have a comp for him? Like who does he remind you of? I haven't seen a lot of him. Well, what are his strengths? What are his weaknesses?
He's an athletic freak. His length is a giant upside for him. He's quick. He can shoot, but pretty much he kind of just fits into the prototype of, I'm going to get a lot of flack for saying this, but kind of like a Greek freak, kind of like an Aldi brand Greek freak kind of category. He's just got that kind of length and body that it scares you. And if he develops, he's a very raw player, very young, but over the next 4 years, what he can develop into is very scary.
So you're pretty high on him.
I am. A lot of it comes from preseason scouting. He was somebody that I picked out way before the college season even started as a sleeper pick that I figured would be in the 10 to 20 range that I liked. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little biased in that regard. But I like the fact that he's one of the youngest prospects, similar to Jaren Jackson Jr. If we got both of them, they'd both be 18 on draft night, 19 going into the season. All the upside in the world, athletic freaks, that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I want our team to be very athletic. I want two-way potential on both ends. If we could have somebody 6'9 through 7 foot point guard through center, that would be beautiful to me.
Yeah, amen. Another name I've seen is Robert Williams from Texas A&M, a center, a sophomore. Clippers hold on to DeAndre Jordan, but it couldn't hurt to add insurance behind him. So the Clippers right now, he's projected to go 14 if the Clippers are still there. He's blocking 3.8 shots per 40 minutes, shooting 64.3%. What do you think of him? He's drawn some comparisons to DeAndre Jordan.
I don't really have any use for him, personally. I'd like to go with somebody a little further back, like Daniel Gafford out of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
6'11". He only plays about 22 minutes per game, so his stats are a little askewed. But 11 points, 6 rebounds, 2 blocks. Very intriguing prospect. I've liked him. He kind of fits where Our pick is currently at 16. But there's a lot of good guards back towards that way that we could look for a backup point guard of the future as well. It'll all really depend on where our first pick falls and what we do with that.
How about Gary Trent Jr. from Duke? Are you a fan of his game? He's 6'6", 215. I've seen a little bit of him. I've been impressed with him. Do you think he'd be a nice pickup in that set with that second pick for the from the Pelicans?
I mean, he's young and athletic, 6'6". I really want a big athletic wing. I want somebody that's going to be able to defend the monster small forwards that are in this league, whether that's with their size or their length. And I think Miles Bridges fits in the size category. He's big enough, he's thick enough, where he could definitely bang with, you know, the LeBrons, the Kawhis, the Jimmys, the guys that are going to overpower you on the wing there. We need somebody who's solid there. Levine's athleticism is crazy, but he's never going to be a brick wall. He's going to get run over and run by quite often on the defensive end. We need a big, solid wing defender that can shoot.
I agree 100% on Bridges. Miles Bridges, he won a game tonight for Michigan State. I love that kid with the second pick. Depending how far we fall back, in I think he could easily go top 10. I think he'd go 9 or 10. You know, there's some other players in that area, Colin Sexton, Mikal Bridges. Let me ask you this. Out of Colin Sexton, Mikal Bridges, or Miles Bridges, which one is your favorite out of those three?
Favorite is Miles. I've watched the most of Miles. I just like his attitude and his character. Now, fit for the team, best immediate go right away, Mikal Bridges. He fits the exact mold of 3-and-D to a T. I believe he shoots the best. He's shooting over 40% from three-point range. He averages 2 steals a game. He is the prototypical 3-and-D guy. He's the oldest prospect out of them. He'll be about 22 on draft night, but he's the most ready to go. If you want to go to the playoffs and possibly make a little noise and you're expecting immediate help, he's the guy that I would say we probably have to go with our own pick.
Great. Any other names in that range that you really like that we haven't discussed?
We covered Daniel Gafford a little bit out of Arkansas. Another big backup plan if we weren't to go with a Jaren Jackson, Ayton, or Bamba with our own pick. Trayvon Duval is intriguing. He has his off nights. He's the Duke point guard. Very athletic, 6'3", 6'10 wingspan. A lot of his high school film, you'll get Derrick Rose flashbacks and chills. His athleticism is through the roof. Jontay Porter, Michael Porter's brother out of Missouri, power forward, 6'11". He's been making some waves. He's somebody to keep an eye on. Missouri's looking like they should sneak into the tournament, even if Michael Porter doesn't come back, but there's more rumblings about his return getting closer. I guess he was dunking in the layup line pregame the other night. So that's something that we'll be able to look forward to watching here. Obviously, he's a name that we'll probably be talking about a lot more down the stretch if he does come back.
Yeah, it sounds like he is. I mean, it's pretty exciting just that news, because the more players that you can possibly get in that top 10 that are going to be argued about, the better for the Bulls, right? The more good players in this draft, the better.
Yep, so, the more eye candy, the better chance you have of, you know, the prospect that you're secretly waiting on falling back to you. So the more talent, the better chances for us to get our hands on top talent, and the better chance for, you know, some people to take some hits on misses on talent we may not value as much as others.
Yes. It's going to be interesting to see where Porter Jr. goes, because a lot of people had him at number one, you know, before the season started in the preseason mocks. I saw him, a lot of people there. I know our friend, the basketball historian Tim Gallagher, absolutely 100% had him at number one. Thought he was the best player in the draft. And then obviously this back issue, it's a serious issue. But if he comes back and shows himself to be, you know, healthy and athletic and still bringing it, you know, that he could vault himself right back in that top three.
No, yeah, like you said, it could either benefit us in the fact that people are worried about his injury issues, and if we're picking 5, 6, 7 around there, he may fall to us. We may be able to get a steal that way, or even just him drawing enough attention to push somebody else that's currently in that top three back within our reach. I think we're going to have a really hard time going wrong in this draft. Come March with the tournament, everything's going to get crazy as it always does. There's going to be somebody that jumps all the way up the board. There's going to be somebody that falls all the way back. For me, outside of Ayton, I don't have a clear, we need to do this kind of thing. Obviously, Ayton's a matter of where we land lottery night and if we're within reach of him. I think for me, that's the only no-brainer is eight. Everything else is up in the air.
Yeah. To wrap things up, can't thank you enough for jumping on again, Keith. Let's talk a little bit about the Cavs and that big trade that was made. I'd like to get your opinion. Do you think they're better or worse than they were before this trade? And also, where do you think, is this going to turn around for them? Are they now the favorite in the East, or do you still have another team ahead of them?
To me, like we talked about, they were always the favorite in the East for me. They have the best player who knows how to get there. The East is relatively the same as it's been the last 3 or 4 years, including the players and the Wizards and the Raptors. The Celtics are obviously leading the conference, but they're fairly fresh. They don't have that great of offense. They have the best defense in the league, but it's Kyrie Irving save us, similar to, you know, when he was the LeBron sidekick there in Cleveland. I think the trade does help them. They get the egos out of there. They get the problems out of there. LeBron will have some time to build some continuity up with the new guys while Kevin Love is out. They'll get their chemistry up. Love will come back probably with a couple games before the playoffs. You know, they'll get a little bit of a vibe going together. I think they're going to be just fine. The East is horrible, which is exciting for us on the come up, because without the dumb luck that we've had from the Portis fight and then Dunn falling after that dunk, you know, we're staring the playoffs right in the face if those things don't happen.
No doubt. No doubt.
So you really couldn't be in a better situation than the Bulls are right now. We have the potential of getting 2 lottery picks, one of which we got for Nikola Mirotic, which completely blows my mind. It's currently sitting at 16 today, where it was at 14 yesterday, but just the fact that it's that close to the lottery, and it literally took Niko Mirotic, that team's own second-round pick, and the willingness to take an ex-Bull that's salary-matched less than or perfect to Niko's in order to get it's still just blowing my mind.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. I think people will look back and say, how did the Bulls finagle a number one pick for Niko Mirotic? I think that's going to be, when we look in return and see the environment that the NBA is going into, where I think teams are going to be a lot less likely to give up number one picks just with the financial situation that's going to happen going forward. We're going to look back and say it's just amazing that the Bulls were able to do that. They really will.
No, but there's no doubt in that. Realistically, going into the trade deadline, my best case scenario was getting maybe a 17 to a 23 for Niko, ultimately flipping him for exactly what his initial value of a 23rd pick was, and then maybe getting a 25 to 30 for Rolo and Holiday together, and then using those 2 picks to move up to the range that we're going to be in from, you know, 10 to 16. So I'm still in shock when I go on there and I look at the mock draft now, and there's 2 of ours that are just floating around right in the middle there with, you know, right at the heart of the second tier of talent there. So we're going to pick up 2 great prospects. Hopefully they have a conservative free agency and they kind of just let this team grow organically with the young guys, and should be great season next year.
And when you look back, this is probably, there's still a lot of basketball left, right? You really hope they don't screw this up going forward. But the season really couldn't have gone any better, because if you tank and you really have an awful year and you're 3-20 on that type of pace for the remainder of the season, there's bound to be a ton of questions about whatever core that you have, right? So Markkanen, Dunn, and Levine, if you're playing that poorly, there's going to be tons of questions. these guys have already proven that they're very good. And these guys have already proven that if they're healthy, they're going to win games. But the various injuries that, you know, we've had, whether Markkanen missing, not even an injury, but missing due to the birth of his child, and Dunn's injury, and Levine's injury, the timing has worked out such that we kind of have the best of both worlds. We're in the market for a top 10, you know, a top 1-5 pick, but also we've proven that this team isn't that bad.
No, yeah, without the dumb luck between the Portis fight, putting him and Nico out for at least the first 8 games for Portis, then Nico another 15 past that, and then Dunn getting injured when he did. It's very crazy how well this plan has unfolded for them. They've been able to force the veterans into a position where they were able to gain value like Nico did. Obviously, Rolo and Holiday were at least in the talks. There was some interest. Teams are just being that much closer with their first-round picks. When somebody like Kuzma gets taken in the 20s, people start to reevaluate the value of a first-round pick. But, you know, they were able to do that. They're able to put all of our guys in the right positions to succeed without really having to worry about the ramifications just because of the way that things have fallen. So we've done this in a way that hasn't been shameless in the sense where we're resting guys, we're throwing games, we're doing things in a way that's going to hurt our culture. We didn't give Rolo and Holiday away, which says a lot to the guys in the locker room. You know, you give them away, what does that say to the rest of your team? That you don't care about them, you don't care about anybody, regardless of what they're doing for you, that if they don't fit your agenda, you'll give them away for pennies. That's not the message you want to give your guys in the locker room. So I have to applaud them for how they've gone about this season. It's been fantastic.
Amen, my man. Hey, thanks for coming on, Keith. You always bring the goods. Thanks again. All the best to you, brother. Looking forward to talking to you next weekend.
Yep. You have a great week, boss.
You too, man. Talk to you soon.